So this is my second trip to Marquette since becoming president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis 5 years ago. I'm delighted to be back here. I'm planning to spend most of my time today talking about the objectives of monetary policy. As you'll hear, the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, has made great progress in formulating and communicating the objectives of monetary policy to the public. I'm going to discuss some of that progress and then move on to some ideas about how the committee can make further improvements along these lines. But I very much look forward to your questions after I'm done speaking. I know I'll learn a lot from them because I always learn a lot from the question and answer sessions. Before I start, though, I must remind you that the views I express today are my own and not necessarily those of my Federal Reserve colleagues. I don't know why people laugh at that. It's true. I should note, actually, that speaking of my Federal Reserve colleagues, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, Charles Plosser, announced today that he's going to be retiring as of March 1st, 2015. It's going to be a big loss to us on the committee. Charlie's just been a huge source of wisdom and insight. I've learned a tremendous amount myself working with him. He's a phenomenal, before he became president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, he was one of the great macroeconomists, great thinkers of macroeconomics of his time. So it's a big loss to us that he's stepping down, but I'm sure he'll have enjoy tremendous success in whatever he chooses to do afterwards. So let me begin with some basics about the Federal Reserve System. I like to tell people that the Fed is a uniquely American institution. Now, what do I mean when I say that? Well, relative to its counterparts around the world, the U.S. Central Bank is highly decentralized. The Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis is one of 12 regional reserve banks that, along with the Board of Governors in Washington, make up the Federal Reserve System. Our bank represents the ninth of the 12 Federal Reserve districts, and our district includes Montana, the Dakotas, Minnesota, northwestern Wisconsin, and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So 8 times per year, the Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC, meets to make monetary policy. So I've already made reference to the FOMC, and Ken did as well in his introduction. The FOMC consists of all 12 presidents of the regional Federal Reserve Banks, including me, and the governors of the Federal Reserve Board contribute to the deliberations in these meetings. But the voting members of the committee in any given year consist only of the governors, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and then a rotating group of 4 other presidents. And I'm one of those 4 presidents this year. So in this way, I see the structure of the FOMC as mirroring the federalist structure of our government. Because representatives from different regions of the country, the various presidents, have input into FOMC deliberations. This basic federalist structure has a long history. In fact, this year is the centennial of the opening of the 12 reserve banks and the start of the work undertaken by the Federal Reserve System. It's been a fascinating 100 years, many twists and turns along the way, and I'm sure that many of you have questions about that journey. The answers to all of your questions, and probably a lot more questions that you wouldn't have thought of, are on a website that the Fed has created at federalreservehistory.org. So all one word, federalreservehistory.org. I encourage you to visit this site to learn more about the people, places, and events that have shaped Federal Reserve history. Now, calm down. I'm not going to say too much more about Fed history, which I'm sure is a relief for some of you. The questions I usually get are more about the future than about the history, I admit. But I do want to draw your attention to one of the things that I think has changed the most over this history, and that's our communication with the public. 100 years ago, Congress created a system that was designed specifically so that residents of Main Street would have a voice in monetary policy. Now, technology has changed a lot since 1914, and so the ways we gather information from Main Street have changed as well. But this fact-finding is an important part of the making of monetary policy. So part of that fact-finding goes on through our board of directors meetings. We have 9 members of our board of directors who come from all around our district, and thereby, through their communication, we're able to learn about what's going on in different parts of our district and what's going on in the local economies. But part of it will also be that tomorrow I'll during part of my visit here, I'll meet with Upper Peninsula business leaders and community leaders to gather this kind of local information that can serve as an input into the making of monetary policy. But the communication, though, is a two-way street. During the past century, the Federal Reserve's communications to the public about its monetary policy actions have also evolved greatly. I think this pace of change was especially rapid in the 8 years under Chairman Bernanke's leadership. So Chairman Bernanke took over in 2006 and stepped down earlier this year. So as the Federal Reserve plans for its second century, I would say the importance of two-way communication is a key lesson from the system's first century. In order for the Fed to continue to be effective, it needs to communicate its policy decisions transparently to the public. Conversely, it also needs the public's input on how those policies are affecting them. Events like the one today and my meetings tomorrow are a key part of fostering that kind of two-way communication. Now, with that background in mind, let me turn back to the FOMC and the making of monetary policy. So I mentioned the FOMC meets 8 times per year. At those meetings, we decide on the level of monetary stimulus for the economy. Now, I'm not going to get into too many details right now about what that term monetary stimulus means, but I'm more than happy to take questions about it afterwards. But I want to note the following, that when the FOMC changes the level of stimulus, our actions tend to push inflation, that is the growth rate of prices in the economy, and employment in the same direction. Raising the level of stimulus puts upward pressure on both inflation and employment. Lowering the level of stimulus puts downward pressure on both inflation and employment. So when the committee gets together, we're basically taking actions that can either push upward on prices and employment at the same time or downward on prices and employment. I can now turn to the main theme of the remainder of my speech, the goals that the FOMC seeks to achieve by varying the level of monetary stimulus. So the natural starting point for our discussion of monetary policy goals is the Federal Reserve Act. The Federal Reserve is a creature, a creation of Congress. And the Federal Reserve Act is the law in which Congress created the Fed and defined its purposes. Through the Federal Reserve Act, Congress requires the Federal Reserve to make monetary policy so as to promote effectively the goals of maximum employment, stable prices, and moderate long-term interest rates. Now, most economists believe that if the Fed achieved the first two mandates, maximum employment, stable prices, it would automatically achieve the third, moderate long-term interest rates. Hence, monetary policymakers in the United States are usually described as having a dual mandate to promote price stability and to promote maximum employment. So Congress's short overarching description of Federal Reserve objectives is the foundation for current monetary policy. But it does not address many specifics. So basically we have that dual mandate, promote price stability and promote maximum employment. But you know that's very helpful, but it'd be useful to have something more specific than that. In January of 2012, in a key milestone, the evolution of the Fed's communications, the FOMC adopted a longer and more precise description of its long-run goals. And as I noted, this is in the midst of Chairman Bernanke's 8-year term as Chairman of the Federal Reserve System. So in January 2012, the committee adopted a longer description of its long-run goals. And I'll call the short but path-breaking document the framework statement. It contains a number of important ideas. And I really encourage everyone to read that document. But I'm going to stress three main elements that are in there. It's very short. It's 5 paragraphs. But basically it contains a lot of information about what your monetary policy, your central bank, is trying to do in the making of monetary policy. The first element that I want to stress is the framework statement explicitly translates the words price stability into a longer run goal of a 2% annual inflation rate. And we're not just satisfied with saying inflation rate. We're very specific what the term inflation rate refers to. It refers specifically to the personal consumption expenditures inflation rate, PCE inflation rate. This is a little different from the usual one you'll see in the newspaper, the Consumer Price Index. We've done a lot of study in the Fed. We feel this is a better measure of inflation than what you'll get with the Consumer Price Index. The main thing that you want to take away is that this is a measure of the rate of increase in the prices of all goods and services, including those related to food and energy. Sometimes you'll hear people refer to what's called core inflation. That strips out the prices of goods of food and energy goods and services. That's not what we're targeting. We're targeting 2% inflation. That includes prices of all goods and services. I think it's a very important step, this adoption of this 2% target. The explicit 2% target means the American public need no longer guess about the Federal Reserve's inflation intentions, either on the upside or on the downside. 2% is our goal. So that's the first piece, is the 2% inflation target. The second element I want to talk about in the framework statement is it discusses the challenges of providing a similar fixed goal for employment. So you would think price stability, 2% inflation, max employment, well, what's the number for that? The framework statement basically says we can't tell you a number for that. It quite rightly emphasizes that monetary policy is not a prime determinant of max employment, even in the long run. The committee's policy stance, therefore, is based on an ever-evolving assessment of the maximum level of employment in both the medium and in the long term. Now, my own assessment of the long-run unemployment rate consists with 2% inflation is currently 5%. And that assessment, though, has fallen greatly over the past 18 months. And we can talk about why later. But basically, this is one of the challenges is that where we think the long-run unemployment rate is going to be that's going to be consistent with our 2% inflation goal, that's evolving as we learn more about the economy. So that's the second element, we don't have a similar metric to capture maximum employment. It's changing over time. Finally, the framework statement describes how the committee weighs the two mandates, promoting maximum employment and promoting price stability, against one another. So you've got two goals. You know, how do you think about balancing those two against each other? Importantly, it stresses that from the point of view of monetary policy, the two mandates are typically complementary. And this is a really important point that, you know, you hear a lot of discussion in the media and a lot of observers talking about, well, the Fed is putting weight on price stability, or it's the Fed is putting weight on max employment. You'll hear people describe as hawks because they care about inflation, or they'll be described as doves because they care about maximum employment. As I noted earlier, monetary policy pushes employment and inflation in the same direction. But as it turns out, most shocks that push employment down also tend to push inflation down over the medium run. And we've actually seen that over the past 7 years since the shock of the Great Recession hit in late 2007. Inflation has run below target, and unemployment has been running above most measures what we'd think of as being consistent with maximum employment. Employment's been too low, and prices have been too low because of that shock we had in 2007. So it's monetary stimulus designed to raise employment will also help the FOMC pursue its inflation objective. Okay, so most shocks push them both in the same direction. We have a tool that can push them back in both in the same direction. I think this point that the two mandates are typically complementary is often underemphasized in popular discussions of monetary policy. Now, the statement does note that there are maybe cases which the mandates are not complementary, meaning that inflation is expected to be above target when the unemployment rate is expected to be unduly high. The framework statement explains that in these circumstances, the FOMC will use a balanced approach to the two mandates when formulating monetary policy. Now, in earlier speeches, I've just talked about this language in some detail. What does it mean to say you're going to have a balanced approach? In my view, this language implies the FOMC would be willing to allow inflation to run above 2% for some time in order to facilitate a faster decline in the unemployment rate. So if you had a situation where you're looking forward, you expected inflation to be above target and the unemployment rate is expected to be unduly high, you would take steps to bring inflation down more slowly than you would otherwise in order to facilitate a faster return of unemployment to what's consistent with maximum employment. So those are the three points I wanted to make up of the framework statement. 2% target for inflation. Max employment can't give you that same metric because that estimate of where we're going to go in the long run is evolving over time. And then how do you balance the two mandates against each other? And there's two sub-points. One is those two mandates are typically complementary with one another, so you don't have to worry about that question. But when they are opposed to one another, we'll do the committee will balance them against each other in making decisions. So this is all in the framework statement that was adopted in January of 2012, over 2.5 years ago now. It's been reaffirmed with minor wording changes in January 2013 and again in January 2014. However, if you look at the minutes for the FOMC meeting in January 2014, you'll see that the FOMC participants viewed the coming year, that is the year of 2014, as an appropriate time to consider whether this statement could be improved in any way. And I certainly concur with this. Okay, so the minutes state that FOMC participants saw 2014 as a time to think about the wording. And I thought this was I agree with that. I think this is a good time. The time is right to consider sharpening the FOMC statement of its objectives in several ways. The minutes note two possible changes along these lines, and I'd like to explain and express support for both of these two possible changes. The first is I believe the FOMC should be clear that its inflation objective is symmetric. So many observers emphasize the need to keep inflation of rising above 2%. So we have our 2% goal. So a lot of people will say, okay, you've got to be careful not to let inflation go above 2%. But in my view, inflation below 2% is just as much of a problem as inflation above 2%. Now remember I said, when we made a 2% target, you don't have to guess anymore what it means, what our intentions are. That we don't want inflation above that 2% target. We also don't want inflation below that 2% target. Now, the Central Bank of Canada also has a 2% inflation target. Its language about symmetry is pretty clear, at least as central banking communications go. They say in their communications, the bank is equally concerned about inflation rising above or falling below the target, and will act in order to bring inflation down or to push it back up to 2%. And in my view, the FOMC should be using similar language to characterize its inflation objective. Why do I see symmetry as important? Without symmetry, inflation might spend considerably more time below 2% than above 2%. Inflation persisting below the 2% target could create doubts in households and businesses about whether the FOMC is truly aiming for 2% inflation or, in fact, is aiming for some lower number. And this kind of unmooring of inflation expectations would reduce the effectiveness of monetary policy as a mitigant as against macroeconomic shocks. You know, I'll note in passing here that inflation is averaged around 1.5% over the past, since the Great Recession began in December 2007. So if you go from December 2007 till now, inflation has averaged around 1.5%. And my own outlook is that inflation I expect inflation to return back to 2% only gradually, reaching 2% in 2018. So another way to improve the FOMC's framework statement would be to describe more clearly how the mandated goals of maximum employment and price stability are linked with what's called financial stability considerations. So what do we mean by that? So many observers, including FOMC participants, have noted that the stance of monetary policy could affect the buildup of risks and risk sensitivities in the financial system. So it's sometimes argued, for example, we've got interest rates have been very low for a long time. So since December 2008, the FOMC has been targeting a Fed funds rate, short-term interbank lending rate, between 0 1/4 percentage point, which is very low. So that's been going on for almost 6 years now. It's sometimes argued these low interest rate policies, which are designed to stimulate economic activity, will also encourage households and corporations to accumulate unduly large amounts of debt. And we saw in 2007 that this kind of leverage, if it's undertaken in sufficient magnitudes, has the potential to create risks to our employment and inflation objectives. Now, of course, regulators in this country and around the world, and including those within the Federal Reserve System itself, should do all they can to mitigate these financial system risks using their wide array of tools. But we have to confront the fact these efforts by regulators may prove to be imperfect. And so monetary policy, by keeping interest rates low to stimulate the economy, may be creating financial stability risks to employment and inflation. The FOMC should be clear that in accordance with its congressional dual mandate, it takes these kinds of financial stability risks to employment and inflation into account when determining the stance of monetary policy. Now, to be clear, I do this kind of accounting myself when I think about the stance of monetary policy. At this time, I do not see financial stability risks as being sufficiently material to affect the appropriate stance of monetary policy. But that, of course, that conclusion could of course, change as economic and financial conditions evolve. So those are the two changes that are mentioned in the minutes that I think could be of use. The symmetry of the inflation objective and the role of financial stability, that is, I think it could be useful to augment the framework statement to make specific reference to these. In my view, there are two other possible improvements to the FOMC statements of its long-run goals that have not yet been mentioned in the minutes but do deserve further committee study. So I've said that the FOMC has a 2% inflation target. I just said that. It's in our framework statement that the committee released. I think the FOMC should consider articulating a benchmark 2-year time horizon for returning inflation to its 2% goal. Right now, although the FOMC has a 2% inflation objective over the long run, it has not specified any time frame for achieving that objective. This lack of specificity suggests that appropriate monetary policy might engender inflation that is far from the 2% target for years at a time. And that creates undue inflation and actually employment uncertainty. Relatedly, the lack of a public timeline for a goal can sometimes lead to a lack of urgency in the pursuit of that goal. I believe that if the FOMC publicly articulated a reasonable time benchmark for achieving its inflation goal, the committee would be led to pursue its inflation target with even more alacrity. Now, I've talked about this 2-year time horizon. Some might argue this kind of time horizon is impractical. But in fact, many central banks around the world actually incorporate a similar timing benchmark. Again, to use the Bank of Canada as an example, it typically makes its monetary policy choices so the inflation rate is projected to return to 2% within 2 years, so exactly the 2-year benchmark that I referred to. Now, I say typically. There are certainly situations in which the Bank of Canada chooses policy so that inflation is projected to return to 2% more slowly, sometimes taking as long as 3 years, or more rapidly, sometimes as quickly as 18 months. But it continues to treat 2 years as a benchmark in the sense that it feels compelled to explain why it is choosing a different time horizon. So that's, I think if you have a 2% inflation target, it's sensible and reasonable and appropriate to augment that with a time horizon of which you're trying to achieve that target. The second possible change in the framework statement that deserves further study is to consider targeting the price level as opposed to the inflation rate. And I've talked about this at some length in previous speeches. I have to admit the relevant issues are somewhat technical, and so I don't plan to talk about them today, but I'm certainly happy to compare those two kinds of targeting if anyone's interested in the question and answer session. Two kinds of targeting being inflation rate versus price level targeting. So to wrap up, the Federal Reserve has existed for over 100 years. No organization lasts for so long without an ability to evolve in response to changes in conditions. And the Federal Reserve is no exception. And I think the changes in our public communication about monetary policy have been especially notable in this regard. The release of our framework statement for monetary policymaking in January 2012 was a key milestone in the evolution of our communications. But I am glad that, as we indicated in January 2014, earlier this year, we are willing to consider amending the statement in possibly substantial ways. After all, we're always learning how to communicate better and think about monetary policy better, and I think that should show up in our framework statement. Thanks very much for listening, and I look forward to taking your questions.